This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. Today, we bring you a full half hour with Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety Chief Jeffrey Hadley. He said no question was off limits. The department has been applauded in the national press for its community policing model, but the organization has not been without its controversies. Thank you for joining us at WMUK.
Thanks for having me.
Where are you from originally?
Well, kind of have a nomadic childhood. I was born in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I grew up in South Florida and was there for the majority of my childhood. But prior, well, let me back up a little bit. I was born in Fort Wayne. I had lived in Philadelphia for a short time with an aunt. We had a kind of a little bit of a broken up, dysfunctional family, like many people do. And then I ended up down in Florida with my dad in second grade. And then I lived with an elderly lady that raised me from third grade all the way till I was 20. And then I started my career down in Florida. And then I eventually went back to Fort Wayne where my siblings were. And then I'm here. So,
I believe you were doing police work for, what, about 2 years or so in Florida area, and then you went to Fort Wayne? Is
yes,
that how that worked?
Yes, ma'am.
Let's go back to when you made the decision to become a police officer. Mm-hmm. What motivated you to do that?
Well, you know, what sparked my interest was a career day in high school, honestly. They brought in every once a year, they have for juniors and seniors in my high school, they would bring in different careers, and you could sign up for those that you were interested in. And law enforcement was one of them. I think an attorney was the second, and I couldn't remember the third. I think as I reflect back, I probably didn't think of it at the time, but, you know, just being part of something I think makes a difference was something that was very appealing to me based on my childhood and based on, you know, a lot of other factors in my personal life. And so, it just felt something I could have some self-worth and some self-esteem doing. And I said, that's what I want to do. And, you know, fortunately, that's what I was able to do.
Before we move on to talking about your actual tenure here in Kalamazoo, I think this might be just a good time to talk more generally about what does it take, the nuts and bolts of being a police officer. What are those requirements right here specifically in the Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety?
Well, when you're talking about hard criteria, so if you were to look at a job description,
right,
they ask for, you know, what are your qualifications? It's, you know, 21 years of age, no felony convictions, solid work history, things of that nature, very general language. So, you could pull Google 100 different agencies and they'd have all very similar similar descriptions of what minimum qualifications are. What I would like to say, though, is if you want to talk about what it takes to be a good officer, in my opinion, in today's world and environment, I think you have to have a high level of emotional intelligence. I think you have to continuously learn. Because our profession is constantly evolving and changing, I think you have to understand people, understand circumstance, context. I think you have to be the ability to apply law into very difficult, complex situations. I think you have to be a resource provider, direct folks to maybe resources that they may need. You have to certainly be compassionate. You have to be able to take control of a situation because sometimes things command that you take control of them in rapidly evolving situations where there isn't time to, discuss, you know, what's going on. I mean, there could be a safety issue, risk issue, things of that nature. So at the end of the day, you got to be a whole lot of stuff for a whole lot of people.
You came to Kalamazoo around June, I believe, of 2008.
Yes.
And the city of Kalamazoo gave you a charge, essentially, as I'm understanding it. They wanted you to have an increased focus on community policing and have a diverse command staff and an internal affairs
department that is transparent. Those are some things that they have asked you to do. When you look back now, I guess it's you just hit about your 8-year anniversary.
That's correct.
How would you assess yourself in those areas?
I think we've done quite well. That doesn't mean there isn't a lot more work to do. I think, you know, police work is an unfinished business. I don't think you can ever sit and think, you know, the job's done or kick up your heels or anything like that. I think that because you're dealing with people and you're dealing with different expectations, different sensitivities that sometimes, oftentimes vary to the extremes. And so we got to try to reconcile a lot of those competing interests and competing sensitivities and provide a public safety department that, you know, at the end of the day has some good outcomes. But to go back to your original question, I think we are extremely engaged in the community. I mean, I could go on and on and on about the litany of programs that we either participate in and or facilitate ourselves. You know, I have always encouraged my command staff to build those relationships in the community. I put very limited constraints on that. And going down to our officers, getting out of their car, meeting people in their neighborhood, looking for those opportunities in their 12-hour shift where they can get out and engage folks in on many different levels. And and that's very intentional. That's the push inside the organization. Mm-hmm. Relationships are the key. That's what will sustain us in tough times. And we are in tough times. Let's not kid ourselves. I think in that regard, we've done very well in terms of diversity and command staff. I mean, I could show you a picture, and I think you would get a sense that we're a very diverse command staff. Four of my six captains are African-American, a female deputy chief, African-American deputy chief. 29% of our department is other than white male. So I think we've made a lot of progress relative to diversifying the department.
I'd like to explore in some detail some of the things that you are doing, yep, kind of in the positive column, for which actually you've gotten some national press. But police work is a mixed bag. You probably feel that, you know, sometimes you make six steps forward and feel like you're making six steps back.
Yes, ma'am.
But I feel that I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to address things that have been in headlines
Please
locally.
Do.
One thing is recently there was a Black Lives Matter rally. Mm-hmm. And one of the, I think they had about four demands, as mm-hmm. you will. One of them was there was a man who died in police custody while being transported from Bronson Hospital.
Yes, ma'am.
And I do know that you all completed an investigation and that it revealed that the autopsy showed that there was no trauma. But just for the record, is there something that you would like to address about that?
I think a very difficult situation for everybody involved. We are very shortly completing, I guess, the investigation is done. We have to follow up with the discipline that's in the midst. So it's a little difficult for me to talk about that specifically here on the radio just because I haven't finished it with the officers involved. But I think that relative to that, you know, and I've said it publicly, so it's no problem me saying here, is that, you know, it's really just a whole sad set of circumstances. The gentleman had been transported to Bronson, had some chest pains and things of that nature, had been seen by Bronson ER staff, had been released by them. He stayed in the ER for about an hour and a half in the lobby so he could catch the bus in the morning, so they allowed him to do that. He was conversant, he was there. And then when the security staff as well as our officers, we have officers that work at Bronson Hospital, excuse me. So they were there in the mornings asking Mr. Dunnigan if he would, hey, it's time to go, time to catch the bus. He didn't want to leave. He said, take me to jail. We don't want to take you to jail. We just want you to go, go about your way.
Where were they hoping to transport him, if not to jail?
Well, initially, they weren't going to transport him anywhere. He was going to catch the bus. And that's why he was waiting until 6 o'clock in the morning. But eventually, you know, he didn't want to leave, and that's when they had ran his name, because they had never ran his name or checked him through our system. Well, then he had a warrant out of Lansing, an arrest warrant. So that
then dictated that his destination would be jail.
Yes, ma'am.
Which was his request.
Right. So they placed him in the squad car, and they began transporting him. At a point, they stopped because they were concerned about him, and that's where he had a deteriorating medical state or medical condition at the time, and they checked on him. They continued to transport him to Kalamazoo County Jail. That's when the nurse, jail staff, had then take him out of the car, and the nurse looked at him, and then they continued to work on him. And he actually passed away at the jail, not necessarily in the back of our car. But we had care and custody of him. And, that brings about certain obligations. And that's where we're at, so.
And just to kind of bring closure to that particular topic, is it your sense that anything could have been done differently?
Well, I think we could have done stuff differently. Do I think we did anything that contributed to his death? No, I don't believe that. Not based on the medical.
What could have been done differently?
Well, I certainly think we had an indifferent attitude. And I think that was pretty evident in the videos. We could have been certainly more caring and compassionate. They believe...
About the fact that he didn't want to leave the hospital? Yeah.
No, the fact that they believed that once they started transporting him that he was faking because he didn't...
That he was faking with his illness?
Yes, because he had just been released from the hospital.
And he was complaining of...
He didn't complain of anything.
Oh.
He had no medical complaints. They thought he was... then faking because he didn't want to go to jail, even though he had asked to go to jail.
Then suddenly he didn't want to go to jail.
Correct.
Okay.
If that makes sense to you.
Okay.
And so I think that...
They should have been more compassionate about then I'm lost.
About his condition. I mean,
his health condition.
Yes.
So then what would have been done differently?
Well, I think that if they could have asked for immediate medical care, asked for an ambulance, drove him back to the hospital.
Because he was still saying that something was wrong with him?
He didn't say anything was wrong with him. He wasn't very responsive. He was still breathing, but he wasn't very responsive to their...
when they were talking to him?
Yes. As he once was.
As he once was.
Yes.
Okay.
You're listening to Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety Chief Jeffrey Hadley on West Southwest.
Now another topic that has come up in the city of Kalamazoo, and you issued an open letter about it. It was one of your officers, I believe a citizen had photographed him with some hand gesture that he was doing that looked like he was pointing, I don't know if it was one hand or two hands, pointed like a gun.
Mm.
Some people apparently, I guess, used that as a saying hello or kind of a greeting gesture in some way. Was it one hand or two hands?
It was one hand, picture that I saw. Yes,
one hand. And my understanding is that particular officer, that is a gesture that he uses often. I think you're well aware that some people in the African-American community felt that you didn't take a position on that, a strong position to say that that was inappropriate or apologize. What is your thoughts in regards to that?
Well, just in regards to that situation, I think that, first and foremost, if the gentleman that took the photo felt threatened or intimidated, you know, I certainly appreciate that and apologize to him on behalf of the department, because we certainly don't want anyone to feel that way. Conversely, though, in talking with Officer Millard, his explanation, if that's how you want to describe it, is that he was merely responding to what he thought the guy was waving at him. It literally was a second and a half interaction. He doesn't know the gentleman. I don't think they've ever had any cause to cross paths. He was turning the corner, going to back up another officer on another call, and he felt the guy waved at him. He looked at him, kind of pointing back, hey, I see you, or those are my words, not necessarily his, and went about his day. It was that brief of interaction. And I think I stated in my initial comments that this isn't, I'm not trying to minimize the guy's feelings. We're in a, and it's not lost on me, the climate we're in America at all. But how do we reconcile those two positions? The officer saying I was merely waving back to a gentleman said I felt threatened by the manner in which he, in the manner in which he did it. We have yet to speak to the gentleman. We've offered to speak to him. We've offered to sit down with him. But he has not availed himself for us to discuss it. So, but I don't want to minimize what the gentleman felt. If he truly felt that way, I understand. And so how do we find peace with those two positions, if you will, in this instance?
Right. As you stated earlier, we all come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it certainly would be understood that actually on both sides of the fence that people can do things and that there's a disconnect, mm-hmm. you know, that people don't understand when someone does something, this is what they mean. And when someone does something on the other side, that this is what they mean. But I think you do talk about a point about where we are right now mm-hmm. in our country. And right now, things are tense in this country. It's racially tense. It's now even especially charged between, you know, people of color and people from the law enforcement community. And within that climate, that if something might have been even okay in the past in some people's minds on both sides, that maybe today people might rethink certain gestures or certain things mm-hmm. that they do moving forward. So now forget the past, but moving forward, might that be something that you might tell your officers that might not be a good community policing?
Of course. I mean, I think that, I mean, it's a learning moment. If that's a truly offensive to some folks, then, you know, we should not do that. Understanding now what occurred and the reaction to that, I think it would, if we didn't learn from that, then that's on us.
Thank you. One other matter locally dealing with race, and I can tell from your comments that it seems like you were taken a little aback by the results, which was a traffic study was done
with the Department. 2013.
Yeah, 2013 with the Department of Public Safety, Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety, and it showed that the department was two times as likely to stop black drivers as whites. And specifically, to more often ask people of color to step out of the vehicle and to be searched when compared to those who are white, and also to be more handcuffed. And interestingly enough, when these searches were done, it would end up that more whites, let's see if I got this right, that whites were more likely to actually have contraband and not the ones of color. Mm-hmm. Can you speak to your thoughts about that study and what has happened since? We said this was 2013. Update us on what's going on with that.
Well, just to go back to the study, you know, this was something that came out of the Citizens Appeal Board that they had asked, you know, could or would the Department of Public Safety look at doing a traffic stop analysis, racial profiling study, however you want to describe it. And this actually predated me a little bit. I thought it was a reasonable question to ask. And so how do you go about a way doing it responsibly that's fair to every all the stakeholders involved? And we found a consultant that does these studies, has done them all over the world, and particularly in law enforcement agencies all across this country. And so, you know, we went about a very exhaustive process to set up. We didn't even have the internal structure to ask. We weren't even asking those questions, you know, of our officers every day. You know, who'd you stop? What was their race? You know, what'd you do? So we had to build the internal infrastructure to be able to ask the right questions so we could analyze the data at the end of the day. So fast forward to September of 13. In which we released the results of the study. And, you know, we released them publicly. You know, we certainly had a, I mean, I had a heads up, obviously. You know, we tried to plan to make sure that it was communicated, you know, correctly and to all parties relatively at the very same time. You know, I didn't even get into, there were, you know, change in verbs or adjectives in the report, because I just wanted to be completely, you know, hands off relative to that. But and I just say that for a point. And so I think what it showed is what's been shown across America, that there is disparate impact, that in certain outcomes in law enforcement, and we have to recognize that and address that in a responsible way. Because this is what we've, you know, had been hearing for a long time. And, you know, I often, since the study, people say, well, why'd you have to do a study when we've been telling you this for a long time? And I just thought that it was a way to, you know, place it in from a real foundational standpoint. So with that said, I think we recognized it. I think the community responded very well and responsible to it. You know, and they said, how can we help? And so we went about really a way of putting some things into place that, you know, reduces that disparate impact and policies, training, more community engagement, things of that nature. And I think it really launched us in a direction of, you know, more faster than maybe we'd been progressing prior to that. And that really brought about, you know, our implicit bias training that we now have our own trainers. We train across the country, you know, more community engagement. Even though I thought we were doing a pretty good job, we had to really ramp it up, going door to door, canvassing, knocking on doors. How can we help? What can we do better? Really pushing that to the very bottom of the organization from a philosophical standpoint. So we could build those relationships. And it's an everyday process, like a marriage. You know, we have an arranged marriage with our community. Can't get divorced, you know? And so we got to work on that every day. And we're going to have bumps in the road and it's going to be sticky. But if we maintain those relationships, we can weather, you know, those storms that come along from time to time. And you know, what's been done, I mean, I could probably go on and on and on, but what I'm most proud of, I think, is the culture of the organization and changing from a, you know, very, I'll say, traditional department by way of, you know, how many tickets did you write, how many arrests did you make, to much more balanced in terms of, you know, how well did you build relationships, what was your community engagement, and solving problems. And sometimes problems is making arrests. I mean, let's not gloss over the fact that there's victims in neighborhoods that need our service, that ask us to solve problems, to take care of problem houses, to take care of problem people that are wreaking havoc in particular neighborhoods, and it's our responsibility to address that. At the same time, how do we embrace the entire community, you know, as we go about that? And so we're very, very laser focused on, you know, let's call those folks that are causing harm in communities, at the same time trying to really reach out and build those relationships with the greater community.
There's another program you've been involved with called Operation Ceasefire.
Mm-hmm.
It's 20 years old, according to an article from Bridge Magazine. A criminologist, David Kennedy, implemented this, first used in Boston.
Correct.
It was credited with significant reductions in homicides and gun-related assaults. Is that being implemented here?
Yes.
And what is it?
Yes, it is being implemented here very soon. We took a number of years to get the funding for it, you know, to have a relationship with John Jay College in the city, University of New York, which is where David Kennedy is out of. And so we had some very... a lot of help from local foundations to bring about the resources that we needed for that. So, but this was something that originated from Isaac, who brought David Kennedy here to Kalamazoo to speak at their annual meeting. And it's really I'll try to simplify it for the show, is that we know there's a very small group of individuals that are responsible for a majority of the violence, intergroup violence. Now, this doesn't talk about domestic violence or some of the anomalies that may happen, such as the Jason Dalton shooting or something like that. This is about intergroup violence in neighborhoods that occurs in most urban areas in this country. And so how, and we know there's only a very small group of individuals that are responsible for that. So how do we narrow the focus on them? One, two, giving them a genuine offer of support from social services in terms of what they may need to be successful and to not participate in that type of activity. So Goodwill will be a strong partner with us in terms of giving those identified individuals priority in terms of whether it be job training, substance abuse training, or any other social services that they may need in order to kind of change the path of their life. It has been very successful in other communities over the years.
This year, you were looking to have body cameras on
Yes.
officers. Can
mm-hmm.
you talk a little bit about that
Sure.
and where you are in that process? I thought you were piloting something.
Yeah, we piloted 9 different cameras, and we selected a camera. And so where we're at now, we had to get servers, a lot of technical things to house all that data, make sure we have the proper space, policy development. And we're now... where we're at now is with our Citizens Appeal Board organizing some community education forums so we can educate the community on the cameras, their limitations, policy, you know, what they can do, what they can't do. We just wanted to try to be as transparent and upfront about that as possible. And so we're hoping sometime in September, by the time we get it to that point, go into a soft launch is what I call. So we'll outfit, you know, a certain number of officers, work out any bugs or anything like that, make sure they're trained properly, make sure they know how to download the system, upload the videos, things of that nature. And then hopefully by into 2017, we'll have them fully implemented for the patrol officer.
For all patrol officers. I'm releasing the floor to you. What do you want us to know?
Well, what I want you to know, is I truly believe in my heart that our officers come to work every day and care and work extremely hard. I think that we have done some substantive work to evolve the public safety department into a 21st century organization. I believe that we have very good, dedicated men and women that go out of their way for this community in 100 different ways that have nothing to do with, you know, traditional police work. I think I want people to know that we're human, that mistakes get made, that people potentially could have a bad day, that they have wives and husbands and children, and they laugh, cry, and bleed just like any of us. And so, but I've worked at 3 departments, and the dedication and the work ethic of this department, and not to take anything away from where I worked before, but collectively, is just outstanding. And they truly care. You know, I'm not saying every officer's perfect, and I'm not saying we don't have maybe a few bad officers. That's probably fairly typical of organizations. I'm not saying that at all. But what I am saying is the men and women of public safety and our new officers that we hired are very dedicated to what they do. They're very proud of what they do. And to remember that, you know, we're all human and we all got a place in this world, and we're better together than we are apart.
You've been listening to Kalamazoo Department of Public Safety Chief Jeffrey Hadley. For a longer version of this interview, where he shares his views on national policing issues and other topics, visit our webpage at wmuk.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.